And welcome back. For generations, young people have been reading about Hans Brinker. Starting this Friday, Hans will be brought to life in a month-long Metro Theatre Company production at the Grandel Theatre. It's playwright Laura Eason's adaptation of the classic book Hans Brinker or the Silver Skates. Eason has had 20 plays or adaptations to her credit and several years as a writer-editor for the hit Netflix series House of Cards. That production's been on hold since sex abuse allegations were raised about since-released House of Cards star Kevin Spacey. Production will resume, though, without him. Laura Eason joins us by phone, and with us in studio is Metro Theatre Company's artistic director, Julia Flood. Julia, great to have you with us in studio.
Thank you.
Laura, great to have an opportunity to chat with you.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to begin with you because I can't not start with what has been so much in the news lately about the whole situation at Netflix. What do you make of this whole Kevin Spacey thing?
Well, the House of Cards situation is clearly part of a larger moment that we're seeing across all industries that is exposing a variety of abuses, including sexual harassment in the workplace, assault, other criminal behavior, both in the workplace and personal settings, child abuse, abuse of power, sexism, misogyny, and showing how systems have not been in place to protect victims or allow victims to come forward without the fear of consequences. But the thing that I think we're all seeing and recognizing is that the commonality that we're seeing of all these incidences across a variety of industries, the commonality is that these types of abuse result in serious trauma for victims that can have long-lasting consequences personally and professionally. So I am hopeful that this moment is happening in that it is exposing predators and their enablers and hopefully appropriately punishing them. And I hope it's a larger shift that is really going to lead to a transformation where victims will not be victimized. But in instances when this happens, that there'll be a place for them to come and report what's been happening and stay safe. But it clearly is connected to a very large moment that we are having as a culture, and a very important one.
I have to assume you were shocked by all that has come out.
Absolutely, yes.
I also have to assume there are an awful lot of your friends and former colleagues who are breathing a sigh of relief now that it's been announced that they are going to continue the series and have 8 episodes in the final year of the series.
Yes, I stepped away from House of Cards after 4 years on the show, 4 amazing years, But my former showrunners, Frank Pugliese and Melissa James Gibson, are still running the show and have friends on the writing staff and, of course, for the crew and all those people that had plans on the season happening for their livelihood. I'm really grateful that they all have found a way forward and that people will not be losing their jobs.
As a writer, how do you think one would proceed when you're proceeding with a program that the main character is no longer there? I mean, it's going to be a difficult process for the writers, I would guess.
Well, we always thought of Robin on par as her co-star. So I think it's an exciting challenge. I think sometimes as a writer, when you have very specific limitations or very specific criteria that you need to respond to, it can result in incredible creativity. And I have great faith in Frank and Melissa and the writers that they're going to pull it off. So I look forward to what they do and how they end the series. I'm really excited to see what they do.
Yeah, I think we all are. That show has a lot of fans, needless to say. There's a huge gap, also needless to say, between Hans Brinker and Frances Underwood. That's a leap.
There sure is.
Very different protagonists.
Yeah. Julia, thank you for letting us talk a little bit about Netflix. I know a lot of people are curious about that. But,
sure.
But tell us about Hans Brinker and what you're bringing forth starting this week.
Well, it's an exciting script, and Laura, thank you so much for writing it. We're doing the second production of this play. It was first commissioned and workshopped at the Arden Theater in Philadelphia, and so St. Louis is the second city to see it. What I love about this play is the athletic skating that happens all the way through it, and the fact that it's a classic story that a lot of people know the title of, but not everybody knows the story itself. It's been around for 150 years. Yeah. I think it's been in print all of that time. It has everything you want in a family show.
Can you give us a synopsized Cliff Notes version of the story?
Sure, although it is a little complicated because there's several storylines running through it. The main storyline is about Hans Brinker, who's 15 years old, and his sister Gretel, who's 12. Their father had an injury. He worked as a repair person on the dikes in Holland, and he fell. And has been in a kind of vegetative state since then for 10 years. So these two young people have had to take on all the responsibilities of adulthood, and the family has slipped into poverty. It has meant they can't go to school in the winter because they can't afford to. And so the story, this moment in time in the story, is when one of the there are some rich children in the play who have bullied the Gretel and Hans sometimes in the past because of their poverty and the clothes they wear. One of them realizes that they're human beings and reaches out, and that's the beginning of a transformation that happens.
Laura, let me come back to you with regard to this is an adaptation, obviously. The challenges that you as a writer transforming a book, a novel, if you will, into a play 150 years after it was written.
Yes. Well, this is something I have done quite a lot in my career, actually. And I started my professional career, and still am a member, of Looking Glass Theater Company in Chicago. And we do a lot of adaptation at Looking Glass, and that is something that we've always really enjoyed. And we have also done that adaptation in our trademark aesthetic, which is very physical and very visual. So this is my 10th adaptation that I've had produced, and about half of them have been specifically for family audiences. For all ages, some specifically for what is traditional children's theater or other shows on main stages that cross over. And it's the kind of work I really enjoy. And as much as a lot of people think adaptation is just editing, you really are bringing your own vision and your own guiding idea when you do adaptation. And so the issues that Julia were just talking about in terms of class and empathy, those were really, and crossing the divide, looking at someone and thinking they are other and finding a bridge and building a bridge to each other. Those were really guiding ideas for me in the adaptation. And that's what you're really bringing to it, is you have this text that exists as a novel, and to make the transition to the stage, you have to really reimagine what it is, leave a bunch on the playwriting floor, and really make your own version of the story, which I definitely have done with this. The original book is actually, half of it is a travelogue, because people didn't travel a lot in 1865. So it's, you know, this is what Amsterdam looked like. And so all of that is gone, and I just really dove into the characters and the story to make this version for a modern audience.
Julia, this is what Amsterdam looked like. You're going to have to make that stage look like Amsterdam. And I understand you've got ice, you've got windmills, you've got the whole nine
yes,
yards.
Yes, we do. Yeah. The primary design focal point is the frozen canal. Yeah. Everything happens on the ice. Yeah. We do have a windmill of sorts, and it's a very beautiful design by David Blake. But the primary is to have that ice that comes right out into the audience and allows the skating to happen, and especially the race for the silver skates.
Is it real ice, or is it somehow an illusion?
No, it's magic ice.
Magic ice. That's the best kind.
It's actually a painted floor, beautifully painted to look like ice, and then has multiple coats of polyurethane on top of it. And we are... our costume designer, Lou Bird, working with John Inchiostro, who's a great craftsperson, built skates that can slide on this ice. They are felt-bottomed, so the technology is something like sliding on your kitchen floor in your socks, isn't it? But it looks very much like real ice skating when you see it.
Are you following? Are you following Laura's lead on this? I mean, this is her play.
Yeah.
Does she set this up, or does the artistic people, such as yourself, come in and say, "This is what we can do with what Laura has done"?
Well, luckily for me, you're talking about the skating.
Yeah.
The skating is written into the script, and she did write into the script a suggestion of how they did it in the original production. Luckily for me, the original director in Philadelphia is somebody that I have been a longtime friend. And so I have been able to go to him and say, how did you do this part? Because there are some technical challenges to making this look real. And he was able to share. But the other part is that I brought in a wonderful skate choreographer. Choreographer. Her name is Jamie McKittrick. She's really primarily a dancer, but all kinds of movement. And so she was able to come in and do choreography that helps it to look like skating. And then we also brought in an actual speed skater to look at the form and to say, no, your weight should shift this way or that way to make sure it really looks like skating.
Laura, this creates yet another dimension for you as the playwright, does it not? I mean, this is a complication you don't often run across in most productions.
Well, that is one of the things I loved about adapting this story, is I'm often drawn to, and my theater company, Looking Glass, is often drawn to staging the unstageable. I have done an adaptation of Around the World in 80 Days and a Tom Sawyer, and these things that, how do you paint the fence? How do you create an elephant on stage? How do you go around the world? How do you do a whole play on a rink of ice? And I think we have so many tools at our disposal in the theater to be creative and to stage the unstageable that it's just, I've never not found a solution that was really exciting to see. And I definitely want to acknowledge Whit McLaughlin, the original director of the show, when we did it at the Arden, for his vision and his interest in trying to do the skating in a way that was elegant, seamless, but also exactly as Julia said, when kids got home, our dream of the show is that kids would go and see Hans Brinker, and then when they got home, they'd kick off their shoes and slide around the living room reenacting the play. So we were able, through Whit's vision and leadership and the beautiful design we had at the Arden, were able to stage the ice and come up with this concept that I think was both elegant but incredibly playful, which was sort of both things we were trying to achieve.
And that is really what drew me to the play. When I was looking for a play to open our first season in our new home at the Grandel Theater in Grand Center. And I knew that stage was wide and had a thrust. And so I was looking for something that was going to be really special and different. So when I read this play, Whit McLaughlin gave it to me to read. And I thought, yeah, this could be something where the audience comes in thinking, oh, I'm going to see something, and gets their socks knocked off by something unusual.
Do you use any other video enhancements? I mean, talking about the new technology?
No. Yeah. It's all good theater technology. Mm-hmm. So it's live actors. We have a live musician playing on stage. We're using the music that was composed for the original production. It was composed for harp and violin and piano, and we have transposed it. Roxanne McWilliams is playing it on piano, recorder, and accordion. So that it's going to sound different, but it's still got the same wonderful quality of Holland and the driving of the race, which is the music of the race is really wonderful. The actors are creating the percussion. And so it's all done live by actors on stage.
I don't want to digress from Hans Brinker, but I can't resist asking Laura about Around the World in 80 Days. And we go from a hot air balloon to ice skates. How in the world did you manufacture that imagery for Around the World?
Well, Don, I will tell you, there is no balloon in the book.
Aha. Well, it shows you how much I know.
Yes, it's a misconception based on the movie, and I actually referenced that in the play. Well, very luckily for me, Around the World, maybe that production, a version of that adaptation is actually running in the UK right now. It's on an 18-city tour in the UK, and I was able to see it in London. I directed it when we did it in Chicago, and the elephant came out of the floor and flew down, and we had a cast of eight playing 80 different characters. And I just saw a version of it in London when I was in London this summer, and was able to see, much like I'm able to see in seeing the video clips of Julia's production of Hans Brinker, which just looks so gorgeous and so beautiful, but is very much its own production. It's absolutely what I hope it would be, but also clearly these artists take on this production. It was the same thing with Around the World and with other productions that I don't have involvement with of my plays and adaptations. It's just a thrill to be able to see the adaptation living on and how other artists then interpret what I have put out into the world. It's a great, great joy, and I'm really grateful that Around the World is having another life, and really grateful that Metro Theater is doing Hans Brinker in such what looks like such a gorgeous production, because you don't always get subsequent productions of things, and Hans Brinker is very close to my heart, and I think it's putting out a message of hope and empathy into the world that we all, I think, always need, but it feels like maybe especially now, mm-hmm. And particularly a story that's talking about crossing a divide, about being able to see the other as fully human, is just feels very powerful and important right now. So I'm really grateful to Julia and to Metro Theater for this production.
And we also have the casting of this production is special for St. Louis. I know that there was some of this in the original production too, but it was very important to me that all the young people in St. Louis would see themselves on stage. And when we talk about crossing a divide, I think in St. Louis that has a special resonance. So of our seven actors, three are African American, four are Caucasian, and I think that's important because that's going to be the demographic that we're playing to, and every young person should see themselves reflected on stage.
You know, it just reminds me that I think Hamilton has changed things, hasn't it, with regard to having a diverse cast, for instance, so that people don't see them as black and white. They see the characters themselves.
Exactly.
That has made a big change. Laura, do you see that as well?
Absolutely. I think Hamilton has brought what is possible and expanded people's idea of what is possible in terms of unexpected and inclusive casting. I think it's something we've been talking about in the theater for a long time, but I think it's pushed the conversation much more forward and made it more of a national conversation. And I think it's essential. We, as theater makers, even though we're producing adaptations or plays that maybe 150 years old, we're presenting them and putting them on stage now to the communities we live in. And I think it is essential that we are inclusive of all the artists that are in that community, that comprise that community, and that we are taking into account who our audience is. I think theater has a unique opportunity to speak live, in a room, in person, and being really conscious of inclusion, and that one of the beautiful things, I think, is that theater can do is bring living human people into a room together to watch something and share something together, which through our highly, you know, technology plugged in social networked world, it's happening less and less. And so I think that theater really embracing, and as Hans Brinker is embracing and including the diversity of our communities, it's essential, and it's something that theater can do as well, if not better, than a lot of art in our world. So it's wonderful.
Julie, we only have a minute left. Is the entire cast all St. Louis, or do you have folks from out of town?
All St. Louis, yes. Yeah. All St. Louis actors. Many recognizable faces, I think, to any of the theater goers in St. Louis. But yes, we have wonderful actors of every stripe, every color. So it's been great to find them and bring them into this production.
And a great theater community here in St.
Yes,
Louis, all
wonderful.
The way around, on both sides of the
yes.
stage, no question about it. Let me just let folks know that the Metro Theater Company's next production is Hans Brinker, and The Silver Skates is the title. It opens Friday with performances at the Grandel Theater through December. Information, I should say, on our website at stlpublicradio.org. There are some staggered dates, so
yes.
it's hard to just put them up. But it starts Friday night. What's the performance time Friday?
On Fridays and Saturdays at 7 and Sundays at 2. And the week between Christmas and New Year's, that whole week we'll be having 2 p.m. matinees for families.
Okay. All of that's going to be on
yeah.
our website so people can
Great.
Make note of it. Laura Eason, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on this production. I'm sure it's going to be outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Laura.
And Julia Flood, thank you. Break a leg, as they say.
Thank you.
Good
thank
luck.
You so much.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. It's a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.